Greetings, Slidell. This is Bob Rouse, your host to the new Grace Radio series, Voices. This new adventure in programming for Grace Radio focuses on the voices of our neighbors here in Slidell about matters of community interest, things that I think we're probably all interested in today. We have a wonderful guest today on Voices, Senator Sharon Hewitt, District 1. We have the regular legislative session coming up in a few weeks. Before crunch time comes, we'll kind of get maybe the game plan from Senator Hewitt. So welcome, Senator Hewitt. We're glad to be with you today.
Thank you so much, Bob. I enjoy visiting with you.
Some of the things that have been happening in the state, it seems like a lot of it right now, there's a lot of issues to talk about, but it seems like one of the important issues that keeps coming around is the budget. I think you just finished a special session dealing with some of the issues, and we caught a blip on Facebook addressing the entire body. I think it was well done, and I'd like to kind of get your idea on what happened during the special session and what impact that will have as we go forward.
Well, it seems like that's all we've talked about now. I've been in office for 14 months, and it's kind of a nonstop thing of talking about the budget and trying to stabilize our government. We closed about a $300 million budget deficit in the last special session. Some of the work that was done was finding, I call it like socks in a drawer, you know, money in your sock drawer, where there were little pockets of money that had been sitting there for some time that weren't doing any good that we needed to bring back into the budget. And so the governor did that. Some of the work was done finally to cut some of our expenses and to challenge the cost structure of our government. And we probably cut, I think, something around $80 million out of the expense plan. And then we did end up using some of the rainy day money. Mm-hmm. And that's money that basically is put into a fund when oil and gas is great. So when the prices are high, some of the oil and gas money then will go into this rainy day fund. So the idea is when times are good, you put money away so that when times are tough, you have a little money stocked away,
right,
like a savings account. And so we did end up using some of the rainy day money, but it was important to me that we start out first by looking at ways to cut our expenses. And that is what we did. I think there is so much more to do and so many more opportunities in the area of cutting expenses. You know, one of the things I've learned through this process is that we don't do a really good job of measuring our results and benchmarking with other states or with private industry. So if I wanted to know, say, the cost to build a state highway, cost per mile, mm-hmm, those things ought to be known.
Sure, I would think so.
And we don't really do a good job of doing that, because then you don't know how you're doing compared to other states. So part of the legislation that I'm going to be bringing forward in this upcoming session has to do with measuring our results, not just costs, but also outcomes. So we want children to be better educated. We want our population to be healthier. You know, so it's not just cost, but it's also about outcomes. And I think that by doing that, one, it forces all the agency heads to become more aware of their business, and everyone in the organization is clearly focused on the same goals and objectives, and everybody's kind of pulling the wagon in the same direction. And then you can benchmark with other states, and if you're doing better or worse than other states, then it's easy to say, well, what are they doing that we're not doing, and what can we do differently or better? And so sometimes there's great ideas out there already in place, and we just need an opportunity to bring those into our way of doing work. I think that is going to absolutely drive our state to becoming more efficient and more focused on the primary objectives of every agency and the service that we're asking them legislatively, that we're asking them to deliver.
It seems to make so much sense. It's the way we run our families. We demonstrate our desires by how we spend our money. We just can't throw it every place and do everything that seems reasonable, but we have to make good common sense decisions and measure what benefit that I get from that.
You're exactly right. And so that's been, I guess, probably one of the big eye-opening things for me is the data that we had available to us to make decisions in the legislature about where to cut money, if cases when we need to cut, which has been pretty much all the time, or conversely, when we get to where we're more stable and we have more money we want to invest, extra money, it'd be nice to know, for me, where do you get the most bang for your buck as a state?
Sure.
and where would you choose to invest the money? And because we don't do a good job of measuring and benchmarking right now, we really have no idea with which to make, I think, better decisions.
Well, it looks like you've been placed in a position of leadership here. You're one of many voices, but it seems like the message that you're getting is really gaining traction, that there are people who are looking at you and saying, yeah, we can do that. People kind of coming behind you to make this all happen, make it a reality.
Well, we all have a role to play in the legislature. I come from a corporate, background, a big business background, and that is kind of a unique voice. There are not very many legislators that have that background. Many of them are attorneys, many of them are small business owners, and they have a unique voice also to contribute to the conversation. So I see that as, part of my responsibility to bring some of those things that I learned in managing billion-dollar budgets. And I can tell you, just to give you a little short story, back in my day, in working for Shell in the mid-80s, oil dropped to $12 a barrel. It was devastating. And so for the first time in the history of the company, we laid off many workers. Of course, the business turned around, things were great, and we had this huge gap in our demographics of our employees. And for the first time ever, the company then chose to hire experienced people away from our competitors. We'd never done that before. We always had only hired kids right out of college. And so we began bringing in people with 10 years experience from Chevron and Exxon and all the big companies. And they began asking, well, why are you doing it like this? And why do you do it like that? And we always thought we were the best. Just ask us, we're the best. But we had never really benchmarked our performance relative to other companies. And we began benchmarking and listening to what some of these new people with new ideas had. And we discovered that we weren't the best, that there were other companies that were doing parts of our business really well, like drilling a well in terms of cost per foot or the production cost per barrel to produce a barrel of oil. And once we began measuring and actually benchmarking with other companies, it was a turning point for our company. And we became kind of lean and mean and very focused on the objectives. And I believe that state government is very similar in that way, and that we could do a lot of good work by focusing on our metrics, knowing what our primary objectives are, and then delivering those and rewarding people for doing it.
Well, of course, the budget's the base of everything.
Yes.
If we don't have the funds to do what we need to do, then really nothing's going to happen. Cutting expenses is outstanding. Getting the proper tools to measure is really a unique and a wonderful thing. But you've been involved in some other things, dealing with quality of life, dealing with what we'll call righteousness and doing things right. You recently called out another senator for some of his personal life, and it was kind of refreshing. Louisiana has been thought of many times as a state of corruption, but it looks like there's a move towards righteousness, a move towards doing things right, doing the right thing for the right reason. And I think you had some active part in that. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I did. I co-sponsored a resolution to expel a fellow senator who had been arrested and basically pled guilty to two counts of domestic abuse. So for me, there were really two issues. One was the idea that I believe our people expect elected officials to honor the law that we are sworn to uphold, and they hold us to a higher standard. We are expected to be the leaders and the role models in our community, and I felt like his behavior was not becoming to a member of the Louisiana State Senate. And although it was not something that I took any pleasure in doing, it was honestly one of the most awful days.
I bet it was.
In the regular session, we had kind of a preliminary day, which was almost like a trial in a big public setting. And then we were scheduled for a second day. And in between those 2 days, he chose to resign. And then the second reason I brought that resolution is because I think we needed to make a statement to all victims of domestic abuse. Mm. We know that statistically that victims of domestic abuse quite often are abused 35 times before they have the courage to reach out for help. I didn't want to send the signal to domestic abuse victims that it didn't matter, that when someone has the courage to stand up and say, I've had enough and I need help, then we need to be able to respond to that in a positive way. And it was not a pleasant thing, but I felt compelled. It seemed to me like it was really the only the right thing to do.
It was a sad day. It was a sad day for me to see this in the news, and I know it was a very difficult day for you. But, you know, sometimes doing the right thing is not always the easy thing.
Oh, that's right. And I think that's what God calls upon us to do, and I think that that's what my constituents want me to do. And so it was an easy decision for me. It was not an easy thing to do, but it was certainly an easy decision for me to be actively involved in trying to move that forward.
Well, many kudos to you for the standing up for the victims of abuse and standing up for righteousness because it's the right thing. Thank you.
Yes,
thank
sir.
You. Last session, you presented some bills dealing with education. As we talked last time, you told me that we would spend the off season trying to see what would happen. I think some good things have come out of that bill. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, a tremendous amount of work has happened in the last year where the Board of Regents has worked with all the different universities and looking at how do we reform higher education. And even though I will tell you that I don't think that we got there in one step, you know, we have much more work to do, and there will probably be a second round of activities that need to happen. But clearly there are a number of good things that came out of their work. One is the expectation that universities in a regional area will work together to eliminate or reduce administrative cost. So things like purchasing and food services and scheduling and student services and police protection, payroll, a lot of those things can be done in a more cost-effective way. When you have several universities that are within 30 miles of each other, you can work together on those things. And what has been a barrier in the past is that many of those universities are not part of the same management system. For example, there are, in Baton Rouge, for example, let's say there, you know, you have LSU, A&M, the flagship university. You have Baton Rouge Community College, which is part of the community college system. You know, you have Southern and Baton Rouge, which is part of the Southern system. And so those colleges tend to, you know, work within their own system when, in fact, in some cases, to me, it makes more sense to work geographically in a regional way so that you can share resources and deliver what the citizens in that community need and want. And for me, the whole push behind Act 619 was to meet the needs of the citizens and to deliver the workforce that the industries in that area need to be able to flourish. And so it's a win-win then. The community benefits, the state benefits because we have people who are working and contributing to the economy. And so that's one of the things that I'm most proud of. There's a lot of work yet to be done in those areas, but we have begun the conversations within the university system, and I'm very hopeful that some good things will come from that.
There's a couple of things that we've talked about already that seem to have a common element, cooperation. And when we talked about the budget, cooperation between departments to know what each other's doing, to help each other, to avoid duplication of effort, to communication with other states is, what are you doing? How can we do better? And now the university's talking with each other. Mm-hmm. Networking, communications, sharing information, sharing ideas, not protecting our own little kingdoms, but really working for the good of the whole. That seems to be a common theme in all of the things we've talked about so far.
Well, I think it makes so much sense to me. As a parent, as a mother, you know, that's what families want us to do and our constituents want us to do, is to do the right thing. And it seems so obvious, you know, as a citizen as to what you need to do. And I thought that a year ago. I still feel that way. And that I get that kind of feedback all the time. I spend a lot of time in the community. That's important to me, to talk with people that are in the community. I'm at a lot of community events. I visit a lot of the businesses in my district. I want to understand what's important to them and then try to implement that into state government. But the problem with state government, and I know we're on the radio and you can't see this visual, but in a lot of the lunchtime talks that I do, I talk about the budget, and I show this ball that is like the size of a softball, and it's a ball of twine that is all tangled up and knotted up, and, you know, it's just a mess. And that's the budget. That is my view of the budget today, unlike what I thought before I was elected. I thought it was much simpler, but it's much more complicated. And it's very difficult to follow the thread through this whole knotted up ball of twine and kind of unravel everything. And so what we do in state government is we Band-Aid on top of it. And in my little visual, I have all kinds of kids' Band-Aids, multicolors with Spider-Man and Superman and Beauty and the Beast and whatever. And that's what we do, is we just Band-Aid on top of it. And but that's not what our citizens want. Our citizens have a very simple view, and that's kind of do the right thing, work together, solve the problems. And so, you know, I try to bring a little bit of that perspective to Baton Rouge. But it's complicated, and in many cases, we've done it to ourselves. We have, through statute, made things like Band-Aids, made it very complicated. And so we really need someone that can kind of go in there and blow things up, clean things up. You know, if you could start from scratch sometimes, there would be great benefit to doing that. And, of course, we don't have that luxury so much, but we have to do more of that and challenge the status quo. Everything's on the table. You know, do the right thing.
It just seems like it takes a little bit of patience, a little bit of initiative, and a desire to see things done right.
Mm-hmm. It does. But I'm enjoying it. It's fun. It's hard work. But I do believe that people genuinely do want to fix some of the challenges in our state. I do believe that. It's just a matter of philosophy in some cases. We philosophically have different ideas on how to do it, and then we just have to figure out a way to do it in this complex world that we live in state government.
Since last we talked, we've had a change in our national government. They've done some things. We've seen some things with pipelines and perhaps offshore drilling type thoughts. How is that going to affect us? Is all of this considered to be competition for us, or are we, in fact, in a better place because of some of the things that have come out of Washington?
I think many of the policies that we have heard President Trump talk about and many of his cabinet selections and things that those folks have been talking about are going to be very good for the state of Louisiana. You know, for example, I will tell you that I was in Washington recently to talk with Congressman Scalise and Senator Cassidy about the unnecessary regulations on the oil and gas business. The oil and gas business is, of course, very dear to my heart. That is my professional background. But more importantly, it is the single biggest business in the state of Louisiana, and it drives our economy. And I'll give you an example of that. There's a gentleman in central Louisiana that has a barbershop. And he told me that his business is down 60% this year compared to last year. Now, he's in central Louisiana, but he said that the reason his business is off is because of the oil and gas industry being down. And he had no idea. He doesn't live in a coastal parish where all the oil and gas guys are coming and going.
Sure.
But clearly people live all over the state that work in the oil and gas industry, and we have lost 26,000 jobs in the state of Louisiana in the last 2 years. 18,000 of them are in the oil and gas business. And so what I have learned is not only do we lose the mineral revenue, the direct mineral revenue that comes from that production to the state, but more importantly, it's the dollars that roll through the economy when people are unemployed. These are normally high-paying jobs, so people are unemployed, they're not paying personal income taxes, or they're working in another field that doesn't pay as well, and so they're paying less income taxes. And we are feeling that in the state. You know, in this state, this last session, we were down $300 million. $200 million of that $300 was as a result of less personal income tax collections than what we had forecasted. And that is according to the economists. This is not my opinion. According to the economists that work with the state, that is directly a result of the loss of jobs in the oil and gas industry and how it affects our economy. Mineral revenue is only 5% of the revenue that comes into the state budget now. It used to be 40-something percent back in the day. It's only 5%, but it is the jobs and the wealth that those jobs create in the economy and how the dollars roll through the barber shops and the grocery stores and whatever that really make the difference. And so to me, the single biggest thing you could do as a state is figure out how to get the oil and gas industry back to work. And although we can't control prices, but we can control a lot of other things. We can undo unnecessary regulations that add an extra cost to doing business. And I heard that message loud and clear as I've been touring the state, actually talking to a lot of oil and gas executives. I've been to Shreveport and Houma and Lafayette and Lake Charles and Houston, where many of the oil and gas companies are located, and ask them, what is preventing you from investing in the state of Louisiana? They spoke about regulations, and many of those are federal regulations, which I've discussed those with Congressman Scalise and Senator Cassidy, but many of them are state statutes that are adding an extra cost to doing business. The other really big message that I got from the oil and gas executives is that the lawsuits, the legacy lawsuits and the coastal lawsuits, are absolutely scaring people out of our state. And when they're given options to invest in buying a field in Louisiana or Texas or Mississippi or Oklahoma, it's much easier for them to choose to invest in another state, because anytime you invest in Louisiana, you're kind of signing on to a legacy lawsuit, and nobody wants to do that. Businesses can't deal with the uncertainty that that brings and the instability that that brings. And so what they want is a more predictable tax structure and a legal environment that treats them fairly.
It's been a great conversation. Thank you so much. I know you're getting ready for the regular session coming up soon. Do you have any hopes and dreams for that, or anything on your mind that you're looking forward to working with in the regular session?
Absolutely. You know, we have to continue to find ways to manage our budget better. The administration believes that, you know, what we need is more revenue, and maybe we do, but I'm not at that point yet. So I'm still focused on making sure that we have done everything we can do with the money that the taxpayers have already given us. And so, you know, measuring our results and benchmarking those results, that is definitely going to be a big part of determining whether we're operating as efficiently as we could. And if we aren't, then what are the steps that we can take to do so? The other big challenge that we have in our state budget is that so much of our money is dedicated already in other ways, either by statute, Louisiana statute, or by the Constitution. And so it turns out, you know, out of a $30 billion budget, roughly, that includes federal and state money, $30 billion, only about $4 billion of that is within the discretion of the legislature. And so it gives you very few levers with which to either cut expenses or to move money into priorities to make really good decisions. And so I think that one of the things we've talked about for several years, and we just need to have the courage to do it, is to challenge some of the funding that is dedicated. We call them statutory dedications, and to basically undedicate that money so that all of the money is on the table. Everyone has an opportunity to argue and to defend their program, their projects, or whatever, and then give the legislature the opportunity to prioritize the funding, which is what I believe, you know, we were elected to do.
Well, it sounds like you're going to have your hands full for the next couple of months. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell our listeners?
Well, I guess my main message would be to continue to stay involved. I think it's very important for legislators to hear the voices of our constituents. You know, our office is here in Slidell. We're available. We're here most every day. You know, you can reach us by phone or by email and give us your feedback. You know, so if you feel like we're barking up the wrong tree, we want to know that. But if you think that we're doing some good work and you want to support us, that's helpful too, because it's tough going some days. You know, I'm there really just trying to do the work of the people that elected me.
Well, I think the people that I know who voted for you are just excited about what they've seen so far and the expectation for the future. Not based so much on political projects, just based on the character that you bring to it, the leadership, the understanding of good common sense things. It's refreshing to have common sense in a political arena. And I think you bring that to the marketplace, and it's pretty exciting for what you're doing, and glad to be living in your district.
Well, you're very sweet to say that. I love what I do. I feel very blessed to be given the opportunity, and I hope the best is yet to come.
Thank you so much, Senator. Appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And thank you, Slidell, for tuning into Voices here on Grace Radio. We want to hear from you. You can call us now at 985-250-1037. You can leave a comment or you can send us a text to the same number. If you've heard something today from Senator Hewitt that you'd like to express yourself on, feel free, 985-250-1037. We'd encourage you to like us on Facebook, where there's always good information on that, or check our website, www.graceradioofslidell.net, where you can make a tax-deductible donation to support this station. We need the financial support of listeners just like you. And again, the number, 985-250-1037. Well, that's it for now. Join us again for Voices of Slidell Daily at 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. and get in the flow of God's grace here in Slidell.